Today we are starting a new chapter,
chapter 9, which is called Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. Raja means sovereign or something which is supreme. So Raja Vidya means supreme knowledge, and Raja Guhyam, Guhyam means secret. It is also the supreme secret. Okay, what is the knowledge, what is the secret, we will try to understand. Now, in the last chapter, Krishna spoke about how a devotee of God who worships God as Saguna Ishvara. This is chapter 8. Krishna spoke about a devotee of God who worships God as Saguna Ishvara, meaning in a form. And such a person, by devotion, can reach God. How? Through indirect liberation. That means even though this person is a devotee of God, but he or she has not yet acquired the knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of the absolute Brahman. The knowledge of the unmanifest God. He has knowledge of the manifest God. He worships the manifest God, but he or she has no knowledge about the absolute, formless, unmanifest God. So how does this person also reach liberation? At the time of death, this devotee remembers God as the Saguna Ishvara, God with form, and then goes to Brahma Loka, attains knowledge from Lord Brahma. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of Brahman, the Absolute. And when he or she attains that knowledge in Brahma Loka, then attains moksha. So this is called indirect liberation, which is called Krama Mukti, K-R-A-M-A, Krama Mukti. In the Upanishads, it is given as Krama Mukti or indirect liberation. Now, in this chapter 9, you will find a lot of similarities to chapter 7. Because chapter 8 was a diversion chapter. In order to answer Arjuna's questions, Lord diverted to this Krama Mukti topic, and now he is coming back again to what he spoke of in chapter 7. So from 9 and 7 you will find a lot of similarities. Now, what is the emphasis in this chapter onwards? Here also Krishna says, one is speaking about same type of devotee or similar type of devotee who has devotion to Saguna Ishvara. He prays, he worships a God with form. He also has devotion to a Saguna Ishvara. But what happens? After a while, a time of worshipping, he comes to a point in life where from worshipping the Saguna Ishvara, he also gets knowledge. He goes on the path of knowledge. So there is worship and there is also knowledge also. Now, what happens when this person attains that knowledge under the guidance of a guru with systematic studying of the scriptures, attains the knowledge? What is the knowledge that person attains? Brahma Gyan, Aham Brahma Asmi, I am that Brahman. My nature is of that Brahman, Aham Brahma Asmi or Brahma Gyan. So while living, he is devoted to worship of Saguna Ishvara. At the same time, he gets knowledge of the Nirguna Brahman, the formless Brahman. Now what happens? At that stage, he becomes what is known as Jivan Mukta. Jivan means alive, Mukta means free. He has got moksha while living. That means now the world does not trouble him anymore. His mind is totally engrossed with God. So what happens to such a person upon death? He need not go to any loka, but he or she goes straight to merge with the Supreme Unmanifest Lord. And this is called direct liberation. The other was called indirect liberation. This is called direct because why? You don't have to go to any other lokas. And in our Upanishads, this is called as Sadyo Mukti. S-A-D-Y-O. Sadyo Mukti. Direct liberation. Which is what Krishna is going to emphasize in this chapter 9. So although Krishna has given us one means of liberation in chapter 8 called Krama Mukti. However, Krishna wants to emphasize also about Sadhya Mukti, direct liberation. Now, why is Krishna wants to emphasize about Sadhya Mukti? Since he already talked about Krama Mukti, you can get devotion and go to Brahmaloka, attain knowledge and get liberation. But why does Krishna want to come back and emphasize again on knowledge and get direct liberation? What is the reason?
Because from Brahmaloka you can come back.
If your desires are that you, if you do not want to attain God, don't want to attain moksha, then you would go to Brahmaloka and go off to liberation. But if your desires are to attain the highest pleasures, you can go to Brahmaloka and come back. So in that chapter, he's not talking about one who has desires, only has desire to merge with God. But now he's taking us back to a direct liberation. Why does he want to emphasize on direct liberation instead of indirect liberation? What is the reason?
Here and now.
That means telling you, you don't have to wait till death to get liberation. You can experience moksha right here and now while living. So he wants us to understand this importance. You don't have to wait till you die and go to Brahma Loka. And then if you don't understand the Gita, you will come back again. So better you get the direct liberation right here and now while you are living. So that's why he comes back to this emphasis on knowledge again. And that means what? It is important that all of us, while we are worshipping the Saguna Ishvara, we should also come to the Vedanta knowledge, which includes Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasana. Okay? So that why we can all enjoy Jivan Mukti while we are living. That right has been given to us, it's been taught to us, so why not we take advantage of that? So here now Krishna will speak about this, what we call direct liberation. So now in verse 1, Krishna is going to introduce what is the subject matter of this chapter, subject matter of chapter 9, and it is nothing but Ishvara Jnanam, knowledge of Ishvara. What type of Ishvara? Knowledge that consists of both lower and higher nature of God. Because in chapter 7 he said, when you have a knowledge about my total nature, lower and higher knowledge, then you will get complete knowledge about God. So here again, Krishna wants to emphasize about the lower and higher nature of God. So the same topic is being connected back to chapter 7. And in chapter 7, if you recall, he spoke about the lower nature of God as Apara Prakriti. What is Apara Prakriti? It is the Lord with attributes. The Lord that we worship with attributes, with shape, size, form, is called Apara Prakriti. Because it has name, it has form. So that is one nature of God which consists of names and forms, which is called Apara Prakriti. And we must understand any form of Lord we worship, why it is called lower nature? Because it is restricted to time and place. That God you worship is either in the temple or at the altar. So that is our one vision of God in a particular place and a particular time. That's why it's called the lower nature of God. So, what is the other nature of God which he spoke about in chapter 7? Para Prakriti, the higher nature of God, superior nature of God. Why superior? Because that unmanifest, formless God is beyond time and space. So, now we have two different natures of God to compare. Okay? The higher nature of God in the Upanishads is called Nirguna. You must have heard this term, right? Nirguna Brahman. Nirguna means, guna means attributes. Nirguna means devoid of attributes. One who has no attributes. This is the higher nature of God. What is the lower nature of God? Saguna, with attributes. So there is a difference. Then there is another difference. The higher nature of God is called Nirvikaraha. Again, vikara means change. Nirvikara means changeless, not subject to change. Therefore, the lower nature of God is called what? Savikaraha, which is subject to change. How? We say subject to change. You can see Lord Shiva in so many different forms. You can see Krishna as baby Krishna, then as teenage Krishna, then as adult Krishna. You can see so many different forms and shapes and colors of every God. So that which is subject to change, that is the lower nature of God, known as Savikara, S-A-V-I-K-A-R-A. The other one is Nirvikara. Another quality of that Supreme Brahman is Nirvikalpa, N-I-R-V-I-K-A-L-P-A, Nirvikalpa. Nirvikalpa means what? Divisionless. You cannot divide. Whereas the lower nature of God is called Savikalpa, with division, meaning there is a particular boundary, isn't it? If you pray to a certain God, it has got a particular shape and form. Whereas Brahman is like space, you cannot divide. It is like space here. There's space inside, there's space outside. You can't divide space. Why? Because it is all pervading, it is everywhere. So the Supreme Brahman is said to be divisionless, and the lower form of Brahman is said to be with division. Another quality given in the Upanishads, the highest form of God is called Chetana Rupam. C-E-T-A-N-A, Chetana Rupam. Meaning, it is endowed with consciousness. It has life in it. So it is just consciousness. It is a mass of consciousness. Whereas the lower nature of God is material in nature. Therefore, it is called Achetana. Instead of Chetana, you add an A in front of it. Achetana, which means what? It is of material nature. Higher form of God has got no material nature, it is just consciousness. Lower form of God is material in nature. So now Krishna says, in this verse 1, he says, I am going to give you knowledge about both Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. You should know the lower and higher nature of God. So, when we know the lower nature of God, it is called Jnanam. It is knowledge. Okay? When you know the lower nature of God... You coming? Sure, sure. Please. Yeah, take this. Do you have the Gita book?
Yeah.
You have? Let's take a seat anyway.
Is there a chair?
Is there a chair there?
Yeah, yeah. There's no chairs.
No, there's no chairs there. Are there chairs upstairs? Okay, okay. You bring down. Yeah. Need two chairs? Yeah. Just hold on. Okay. So to know, when you have knowledge about the lower nature of God, that is called Jnanam. When you know the higher nature of God, what is that called? Huh? Vijnanam. That is wisdom. Lower nature of God we know is called Jnanam. When we know the higher nature of God, that is called wisdom. So if you recall, what was the title of chapter 7? Jnana, Vijnana, Yoga. The knowledge and wisdom. And the same thing again, the same words Jnana, Vijnana are being mentioned again in chapter 9 verse 1. We will come to that. Okay. So I just want to show you the connection between chapter 7 and chapter 9. So, Krishna says, both I am going to give you. I am going to give you Jnanam, which means you will understand the lower nature of God. Then I will give you Vijnanam, wisdom, which means you will understand the higher nature of God. That means both Saguna Ishvara and Nirguna Ishvara, both you will know. Okay? And when you gain knowledge of Saguna Ishvara, please come in here. Yeah, just take a seat. No, 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 don't worry. Don't worry. Just take a seat anyway. So, when you gain knowledge of Saguna Ishvara, we are in chapter 9. Inform, please inform me. We are in chapter 9. Okay, when you gain knowledge of Saguna Ishvara, the difference is there is a level of division. Isn't it? when we have knowledge of the lower form of God, which is the God with form, there is always a case of division. What in Sanskrit is called Dvaita. It's called Dvaita Bhakti. Which means what? At this level, you see differences between God and yourself. Right? That is called Dvaita Jnanam or Dvaita Bhakti. I am different, God is different. God is perfection, I am imperfection. God is superior, I am inferior. There is that difference in Dvaita Bhakti when we have knowledge of the God with form. But when a person comes to know the higher nature of God, what is the higher nature of God? Formless, consciousness, beyond time and space. And when we come to understand our real nature, Atma, what is Atma? Formless, consciousness, beyond time and space. Then that person comes to understand between that God and between myself, there is no more difference. That difference drops. So we must understand, when we say merger with God, it's not a place we have to travel somewhere, you have to go in heaven or go to Kailash or somewhere to go and sit down with God. Merger with God is what? That understanding that my nature, my real nature, Atman, and the higher nature of God is one and the same. So it is just dropping our notion that God and me are different. Once we understand that, that is called already Jivan Mukta. You understand your real nature. Okay? So that is the difference, and that is called Advaita Jnanam. The other was Dvaita, D-V-A-I-T-A. Dvaita means difference. Advaita means no difference. Okay? So now Krishna is going to give us what? Both Dvaita and Advaita Jnanam. Okay? Now let us look at the verse here. What does he say? So in chapter 9 verse 1, page 163, chapter 9 verse 1, the word, the very first line, you see the word tu there, T-U, tu, a very significant word. So what this word tu means is however, meaning what? This knowledge which I am going to give you now is different than what I spoke about in chapter 8. So there is a distinction with what I am going to speak now. So the word tu indicates that means there is now a change in the topic. He is going to talk about a different path how to reach God. Earlier was Krama Mukti, now I am going to talk about Sadhya Mukti. So this word tu is a very significant word. Now what does he say? Now look at the third line. Jnanam Vijnanam Sahitam Aham Pravakshami. Aham Pravakshami appears in the second line. Pravakshami means Krishna is saying, I am going to speak. Pravakshami means nothing but speak. So Krishna is telling him, now, however, I am going to speak to you about what? Jnanam Vijnanam Sahitam. Meaning what? Knowledge, Jnanam. Sahita means combined with. With what? Vijnanam. So this is what Krishna says, I am going to speak to you about now. I am going to talk to you about knowledge, Jnanam, Sahitam, combined with Vijnanam, wisdom. That means what? I am going to talk to you about the lower nature and higher nature about God. I am going to give you both the knowledge. Okay. So that means what? When you have knowledge and wisdom, that means what? We can attain that moksha right here while we are living. So, Pravakshami means I will clearly speak to you about this. That's why chapter 9 is a very important and a very interesting chapter. And a very confusing, it has a lot of confusing verses and controversial verses also. Okay. So, once you know both the lower and higher nature of God, you will get direct liberation. Now, what is the glory of this knowledge? So, because you know, when we are asked to go and attend something, you want to know what is so great about that. Right? What is so special about that? So what? You've got knowledge. Bhagavad Gita knowledge, so what? So now he's going to tell us what is the glory of this knowledge in the next few verses. The very first glory of this knowledge is Bhuyatama, which you can see there in the first line. Bhuyatama means it is a great secret. So if you can understand this, that means you have understood a very, very great secret. It is a very rare knowledge. So why is it a rare knowledge? Why is it a secret? Why does Krishna call this knowledge a great secret? Very few people not only know about it, but very few people are even interested to know about the higher nature of God. Majority of people know about the Saguna Ishvara. They know about the God with form. They have heard all kinds of stories, they have done worship, they have thorough knowledge about Saguna Ishvara. But very, very, very few people, with the exception of those in this class, are interested to know about the higher nature of God. So it remains a secret. It remains a great secret. And what else he says? If you look at the last line, the fourth line, yach nyatva, nyatva means by knowing this secret, what happens? He says, moksha se, you become free from what? Asubat. Asubat means all kinds of evils. So once you know this knowledge, you will be free from all kinds of evil. So there is a practical benefit now to gaining this knowledge. There is some value in this knowledge. And when we say you get freedom from evil, what does it mean to us? What is this evil that Krishna is referring to? All the negative qualities like greed, anger, jealousy, pride, ego, lust, etc. These are the qualities. Why they call asubat? They are what we call evil. Because when we have this kind of nature in our mind, it makes us do sinful things. Whereas knowledge purifies us, it removes away these negative tendencies from our mind. So that is one of the greatest advantages. And especially the scriptures speak to us about the six greatest evils, which I have discussed with you before, which is kama, krodha, moha, lobha, mada, matsarya. The six great evils which we all have to deal with. And knowledge helps to purify the mind and remove these wrongful or evil thoughts from our mind. In fact, Shankara calls them, he uses a very strong word, he says they steal away our wisdom, they steal away the jewels, ratna. He says ratna means jewel. So these six evils rob away a very precious thing in us. What is the precious thing? Knowledge. The more evil tendencies we have, the more we stray away from this precious knowledge. We lose this precious knowledge. So that's why Shankara says, be very aware. He says, beware, beware, beware. Three times he uses the word jagrata, jagrata, jagrata. Awake, awake, awake. Do not fall for these six evils because they rob you of the most precious thing called knowledge. So now, all these qualities will be removed away, moksha se asubat. We have freedom from these six evils. Another reason why also Krishna has chosen Arjuna, particularly he is telling him now, there is another quality you also must have. If you want to pursue this knowledge, there is one important quality you as a student must have. And what is that quality? Which is given in the second line of verse 1, Anasuyave. Anasuyave is a very rare quality in any student, which comes from the root word Asuya. Asuya means what? Non-critical approach. What do we mean by non-critical approach? Non-judgmental. Now you are listening with a critical mind. Why? Because you are trying to find some faults in the knowledge. Maybe that fellow is wrong. Why he said like that? I know like that. I will try to correct him. Right? So when you listen with a critical mind, this is what we call you try to find faults in the knowledge, that means the purpose you are listening is, how can I find faults in the knowledge? How can I find faults in the teacher? So some students come to the class purely to challenge the teacher. Once I was giving a class, one student was asking so many questions. And then after that he came and told me, purpose of me coming to class was to challenge you. He really said that because he wanted to challenge me and find out whether his knowledge was correct or my knowledge was correct. After that, I didn't see him. I don't know what happened. So, when we have this kind of attitude, it's not that it is wrong to ask questions. Asking questions is different. But when we have a critical approach, that means we are not prepared to open our mind and receive and understand. If you don't agree with the knowledge, it's okay. Listen with an open mind. Then go back and analyze it. And if you still don't accept it, reject it. You have that freedom. But when you listen with a critical mind just to find faults everywhere, then who is the loser? You are the loser. Not the teacher, the student is the loser. So even if you don't accept, listen first. Take the notes, go back, analyze it. If you accept it, take it. If you don't accept it, reject it. But don't listen with a critical attitude. Therefore, have some basic faith in the scriptures, have some basic faith in the Guru also. So, Krishna says, Arjuna, since you are Anasuya way, that's why I'm giving you this knowledge. In fact, later, if you look at chapter 18, verse 67, Krishna says, those type of people who you should not speak about Bhagavad Gita to. Chapter 18, verse 67. Page 333. Chapter 18, verse 67. Page 333. So he says, Krishna is now telling Arjuna, after giving him the whole Bhagavad Gita dialogue, he says, never is this to be spoken by you, this dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, to one who is not astyo. Astyo meaning one who does not have a control over his senses and the mind. Therefore, there must be some discipline in this person. Because even to sit down and listen to speaker 1.5 hours, I don't know how you do it. I must give credit to you all. I can speak for 1.5 hours, but to listen for 1.5 hours is not easy. So there must be some discipline of the mind and the senses. Number two, nor to one without devotion. Somebody has no devotion to God, don't waste your time talking to him about Bhagavad Gita. Three, nor to him who desires not to listen. You'll bore that person to death. Right? Doesn't want to listen, you go unnecessary and lecture him. He doesn't want to listen. And fourth is, verse 1, nor yet to him who speaks ill of me. So there must be some basic faith in the scripture, some basic faith in God, some basic faith in the teacher. And that is called Anasuya way. And now in verse number 2, he carries on to give us further glory of this knowledge. So first we have to sell you the reason why you have to study this knowledge. And once you understand the benefit, then you will want to study. So in verse number 2 now, he says, this knowledge which I am going to give you is called Raja Vidya. Raja, you can understand, supreme or sovereign, the most highest, right? Highest is the king in a country, there can be nobody higher than him. So this is Raja Vidya. It is the king of all knowledges. Whatever knowledge you have now, you cannot call it Raja Vidya except spiritual knowledge. So why is this knowledge called Raja Vidya? What about all the other knowledge that you have learned? Why can't you call that Raja Vidya? Worldly things, yes. What else? Limited knowledge, what else? Subject to change. All the knowledge that you have now is about the world which is subject to change and perishable. This is the only knowledge called Nirguna Brahman, which is not subject to change, which is always the same throughout all periods of time. So this is the only knowledge which deals with the changeless, permanent aspect of the Lord, Satchit Ananda. Whereas every other knowledge that you acquire to now is about the changing, perishable world. So that's why this is called Raja Vidya. Second, it is called Raja Guhyam, which is a secret. And we just discussed now why it is called a secret, because it is not easy for everybody. First of all, many people don't appreciate it. Second, to understand this knowledge requires a very subtle mind. It requires a very disciplined mind. So not everybody is receptive to this knowledge. And many people listen and listen and listen after years and still cannot understand also. Right? So in fact, in chapter 2, so Krishna spoke about this. If you go back to chapter 2, verse number 29. Here he spoke about the self, the Atman, page 38. Chapter 2, verse 29. So now he's talking about the self. Why is it so difficult for people to understand about this self? He says, some people hear and hear about it, this Atman, they think is something of a marvel, something of, you know, which is, what is Atma? Atma is your own nature. But what you are hearing, you are thinking about it, something as something marvelous or something very magical. Another speaks about it as a marvel. Another hears about it as a marvel. Another person, after having known, hearing it, still after years of attending lectures, still doesn't understand what is Atma. So it is not easy for us to grasp this knowledge. That's why it still remains Raja Guhyam. So in spite of learning for many years, people still do not understand what is this concept about Atman. And then he gives us further glories about this knowledge. Why should we learn this knowledge? Another reason is in the second line. It is Pavitram Uttamam. Uttamam means greatest. Pavitra means purifier or sanctifier. It is the greatest purifier in creation. Why again? Because this knowledge removes all the impurities. All the impurities which we discussed just now, desire, anger, greed, lust, etc. It has the power to remove all these impurities from our mind. Impurities in the form of raga, dvesha, kama, krodha, all these impurities can be removed. In fact, if you recall in chapter 4, verse 38, he did mention this also. Chapter 4, verse 38, page 96. Page 96, chapter 4, verse 38. Verily, there is no purifier in this world like knowledge. Whatever other sadhana we do cannot purify you like knowledge can purify you. So, we must understand it is not just an ordinary purifier. He calls it Uttamam Pavitram, greatest purifier. Because why? All other sadhanas that we do, see, sometimes they say go to Ganges, take a dip, it purifies you. So, how is that now compared to knowledge purifying you? You go to Ganges, you dip yourself, you purify yourself. So, why should I waste my time studying knowledge? The physical dirt is removed, okay? Now, the thing is, it's very allegorical also to understand, when we step into the Ganga, purify, we are purifying some dirt from our mind, right? But the minute we step out, we come back to the same thing again. So the Ganga is supposed to purify you if you understand that from henceforth now, I want to change my life. If it causes that transformation, it has purified you. But if you just go and dip and think that all your past sins are washed away, they are not washed away at all. The idea is to come to that realization that from now onwards, I want to change my direction of life. But whereas this is the greatest purifier because it really cleans up your mind and makes you change your direction of life. It causes a transformation. That's why there is a difference between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is information, wisdom is transformation. Knowledge is learned from external sources. Wisdom is acquired by our own contemplations. It's inward. The other is external, this is internal. So it becomes the greatest purifier. So therefore you don't commit any new or fresh papas. And I've explained to you before this also, the three different types of karma. If you recall, you are born with prarabdha karma. You cannot do anything about prarabdha karma. From your birth to your death, you have to burn the prarabdha karmas. Even if you become a God-realized soul while living, even then your prarabdha karmas cannot be taken away. Even God won't take it away. You have to utilize them from your birth to your death. What about your warehouse of karmas? Okay, let's leave that aside, Sanchi. Now, what here is talking about is the agami karmas. From here, now, henceforth, you change your direction in life. That means what? You don't accumulate new karmas. And if you don't accumulate new karmas, when you become a Jivan Mukta, God will burn off all your Sanchit karmas. So Sanchit karmas are gone. Prarabdha karmas will be finished by your death. You don't create any new karmas. What happens? There is moksha. That is called moksha. To burn away these three karmas. But by taking a dip in the Ganges is not going to solve your problem. So he says this is a pavitram uttamam. Another quality of this knowledge, look at the third line. Pratyaksha avagam. Avagam means it is realizable. Pratyaksha means by direct perception. See, some knowledge, I can tell you, if you're not gone to a certain place, I describe the thing to you, you may get to know about that description of that place. But this knowledge is available directly to you here and now. Meaning what? It is not something that is realizable after death. It means with this knowledge, you can experience the results of the knowledge while you are living. In fact, there are a number of students who, because of this knowledge, they have transformed their lives also. They have changed the direction of their lives. So that knowledge has got an immediate effect. That's why he's telling you, it is pratyaksha avagam. It is directly realizable right here and now. If you realize this knowledge, you can experience. What is the greatest thing you can experience with this knowledge? What do you mean by realizing it here and now? What is the greatest experience you can, greatest benefit you can have if you realize this knowledge? Huh? Freedom from? So how is the, what is the best
fearlessness.
What is the best experience you can have from this knowledge? Ananda, mana shanti. So all these things, removal of dirt from the mind, freedom from all your limitations, the final result is what? Anandam, manaha shanti. So we can realize this manaha shanti, this anandam which we all seek right here and now. You don't have to wait till after death. So this tranquility and peace of mind can be immediately experienced. Another benefit of this knowledge, dharmyam. It is righteous. Righteous meaning, it is in keeping with the teachings of the Vedas. Krishna did not come to create a whole new religion or whole new knowledge. Whatever Krishna is giving us in Bhagavad Gita is taken from the Vedas itself. So that's why it is pure, it is dharmyam, it is righteous. And these teachings here in the Bhagavad Gita are not contrary to the Vedas also. That's why if you remember in chapter 4 verses 1 and 2, this is what exactly Krishna said. Go back to chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. Page 79. Krishna told Arjuna about this knowledge. He said, I taught this imperishable yoga, meaning I gave this knowledge to who? Vivaswan, the sun god. And the sun, or the creation of the sun, was the very first creation before the world and before human beings were created. And the sun god is known as Vivaswan. Vivaswan not only was created, but Krishna or God gave him the knowledge. And what did the sun god do? Vivasvan passed it on to his son called Manu. And we are all descendants from Manu, hence we are called Manushya. So Manu was the first human being who walked the earth. And Manu also did not hold the knowledge to himself. He passed it on to his son Ikshvaku, who is the first ruler of the Solar dynasty. So the Solar dynasty from which Lord Rama comes from, the very first king was Ikshvaku. But unfortunately, if you look at, in verse 2 he says, this knowledge was handed down from father to son, from king to subjects, from father to son. It was kept alive thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So this knowledge which was given to Vivasvan, at that time it was called the Vedas. Now Krishna says, I am going to give you that same knowledge, but the packaging is changed. It is called now Bhagavad Gita. The knowledge is the same, only the packaging has been changed. So that's why he says this knowledge is dharmyam, it is righteous. It conforms to the teachings of the Vedas. It does not deviate from that. It is in accordance to the teachings of the Vedas. Now, we look at all these glories of the knowledge. It is Raja Vidya, it is Raja Guhyam, it is Pavitram, it is directly realizable, it is righteous knowledge. Then definitely one doubt will come in our mind. What is that doubt? Which all students ask what?
Whether it's an object.
Whether it's an object.
Yes. Duality.
Duality. Every student will ask the question. Is it easy to practice? So, Krishna gives us another assurance here. Susukham kartu. Kartu means to practice. It is very, very easy. Susukham. Susukham kartum. You can easily get this knowledge very comfortably. Now, why does he say it's so easy to get this knowledge? All of us are struggling to understand. Yet Krishna says it is very easy to get this knowledge. It is you, meaning your own, yourself. But what else?
Available,
surrender. What?
Desire
to? Yeah. So why is it so easy? If we compare to that one in chapter 8, you remember what he described about the person at the time of death, that yogi? He must be very disciplined, lead a disciplined life, be very devoted to God. Then at time of death, he must know how to control the pranas, to bring it to this one, to the forehead, and then here, and then one mistake means gone already. So to practice that, bringing the pranas up the Sushumna Nadi and make sure it leaves from the crown of the head, you think that is easier or starting this knowledge? Starting knowledge is easier, isn't it? Right? Okay, one. Number two. Some people say, okay, I don't want to come to Gita class. I'm happy doing rituals. Okay? Doing rituals, you think is easy? You have to pay the priest some fee. You have to buy right materials, right? All the right materials you have to buy. You have to ensure that the mantras are chanted correctly. Wrongly chanted, also you don't get the benefit. You sit there for 3-4 hours chanting mantras, but after 4 hours also nothing happens. Right? Then you must sit in the right direction. So many rules and conditions are there. And then what do you get? After all the 4 hours of elaborate prayers, everything, assuming everything has gone correctly, what do you get? Finite gains. Whatever you get is finite only, because after that you will still be unhappy and you will come back again for another 4 hour prayers. So that's why he's comparing. He said, yet people go to all these elaborate things. They are willing to do control of the prana, they are willing to do this, do elaborate prayers, go here, go there. Here, knowledge, 15 ringgit given to you. How much you pay for the book? 15 ringgit only, that's all. Free also, some people give free books also. But all we have to do is just read and understand that knowledge. So that's why he's saying, it is susukham. so easy on the contrary to practice, to understand this. And that also, what do you get? If you really understand this knowledge, if you really absorb this knowledge, he says, the last quality he gives there, avyayam, it is imperishable. It takes you to the highest goal. It is not a, what we call a finite goal. It takes you to the infinite goal. So it is easy to practice, and the result, the phalam, is that it does not take you to Swarga Loka, it takes you to higher than Swarga Loka. It takes you to moksha straight away. So now he's given us all the glories of the knowledge, but despite all the glories of this knowledge, unfortunately many people still are not interested to come to this Ishvara Jnanam. Right? So this greatest wisdom, which actually is very easily available to all of us. There is so much of resources on the internet. There are so many Swamijis who are coming here to give discourses. It is only for us to tap into this knowledge. That's all. So yet, Krishna says in verse number 3, Purusha ashraddha danaha dharmasya. Many people do not have Shraddha, they do not have faith in this knowledge. See, Shraddha means faith. A Shraddha, when you put the A in front of the Shraddha, means people who are devoid of faith. They have no faith in the scriptures. They think, what is this Bhagavad Gita? What is this Vedas? What are these Upanishads? They have no faith that these words which were spoken by Lord Krishna 5000 years ago to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is meant for us. It's so relevant, the knowledge. But they have no faith at all in this knowledge. Faith means what? They don't believe that this knowledge can be of any benefit to them at all. So they don't accept the authority of the scriptures. Some even find fault with the words of the scriptures. So Krishna says, these are the very people, ashraddha danaha. They never come to the scriptures. And what else? Dharmasya. Dharmasya means here, the word Dharmasya stands for the Vedantic teachings, the scriptures. So, what they don't have faith in? In Dharmasya, in this path of Dharma. The Vedas are teaching us the righteous path, the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us the righteous path, but these people have no faith at all in this Dharma. And thus, what happens to these people? In the second line, go to the third line. Aprapya mam. Aprapya means they fail to reach who? Mam, me. Me is who? The absolute Brahman, not Krishna. The absolute Brahman, that is moksha. So when he says mam, they fail to attain me, they do not attain the infinite security, the infinite bliss. They do not attain moksha. But you know, as Hindus, we've got a great advantage. Better luck next birth again. Doesn't matter. Try again. Don't reach moksha again. Try again one more birth. Don't worry. You got so many births to go. So we don't have to worry. There's no urgency. I'm just joking. So we are all expert at what? Postponing, isn't it? What they call that? What is that term called? Procrastination. Procrastination. But the biggest question you have to ask yourself, if you want to procrastinate, maybe next week half the students won't turn up. If you want to procrastinate, I can take the knowledge later, I can take knowledge next life, doesn't matter, why do I want to suffer this life? Biggest question we have to ask ourselves is what? Will you be born as a human again? What guarantee do you have that you will take the next birth as a human being? So when you have been given the opportunity, do not waste that. And that's why I told a class last week, I think here, that if you can, go and read Bhajan Govindam. That tells you, that warns you about all this, what type of life we are leading and wasting our life. Vaja Govinda by Adi Sankaracharya. So he says, what happens to these people? They do not attain me. Therefore, what do they attain? Nivartante mrityu samsara vartmani. Vartmani means a path. What type of path? Which is nothing but mrityu and samsara. Death, birth. Death, birth. They keep on. Nivartante means go on the merry-go-round. So, take the human form or take whatever form, come up to human form, die, go to Loka, Swarga Loka, come back down again, start the whole cycle again and again and again. So they will definitely continue on this path, which Shankara calls so beautifully in Vaja Govindam, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Mananam. Again and again birth, again and again death, then what? Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam, which means what? Before you take the next birth, you are lying, sleeping in your mother's womb. So, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani Jatare Shayanam, sleeping in the mother's womb. Then take birth, then death, come back again mother's womb and go. What is this? Womb and tomb. What is this? Chakra says, Iha Sansare. This is called Sansara. This is exactly the ocean of birth and death, which is what? Bahu Duskare, which means very difficult to cross over. It's so difficult to attain this human form, already so difficult. Then to cross over this ocean of birth and death is another difficulty. And therefore, Shankara says what? In the last line, Ya Sansare Bahu Dustare Kripaya Pare Pare Muha. What? Pare? Kripaya Pare Pare Muhare. Please bless me, Murari. He addresses Krishna as killer of the demon Mura, which means what? The demon in us. So what is appealing to Krishna? O Lord, help me kill the impurities and the demons in me so that I can cross over this ocean of birth and death. Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam. So this sansara, this transmigration, which contains all our problems, and we go up and we come back again to the same problems of disease, decay, separation, loss, and the greatest fear of this samsara is what? Fear of death. Right? Everybody wants mortality. So such a person who has no faith in the scriptures, will not attain moksha, but will continue to revolve around this ocean of samsara. So now, the subject matter has been introduced, the glory of this knowledge has been given. Now from verse 4, Krishna starts on the, what is the actual knowledge that he wants us to give us. Okay? So this main topic of chapter 9 starts now in verse number 4. And you find verse number 4 and 5 very contradictory, sir. If you just read the English text, okay, verse number 4, all this is permeated by me in my unmanifested aspect, and all beings exist in me. Therefore, really speaking, I am not in them. Okay? Verse number 5. Nay, those beings exist not in me. What did he say in verse 4? All beings exist in me. Now, verse 5, he says what? The beings don't exist in me. Okay, so already there's some contradiction, but it's not a contradiction if we understand it in the right manner. Okay, so let us look at the verses now. Verse number 4. Okay. First thing is, he talks about now his nature. Here he's describing God's nature himself. So if you look at the second line of verse 4, the second word there, avyakta murtini. Avyakta Murtina. Murtina means state. State of what? Avyakta, which means unmanifest. So the very first thing he's telling us is about his unmanifest state. This is a definition of para prakriti, which means the higher nature of God is called unmanifest. It has no attributes and it is formless. Okay? Now when we say unmanifest, what does it mean to us? Consciousness, yes. What else? No. He's talking about the unmanifest. That means his nature, God's nature. Attributeless. So what does it mean to us when somebody says this is unmanifest? No name, no form, no color, which means what? You cannot perceive it with your sense organs. Your eyes cannot see, your ears cannot hear. Why? Because there's no form. What are you going to see? It has got no sound. What are you going to hear? It has no form. What are you going to touch? So it is beyond the perception of your senses. You cannot use your senses to understand this unmanifest. Okay? So avyakta means that which is not perceptible to sense organs. Because if anything has got a property of sound, taste, touch, color, at least your sense organs can perceive it. So Ishvara in his highest nature is not perceptible to any sense organs. That's why if you look at the Upanishads, they describe this Ishvara in the highest state as Ashabdam. All the word A in front. Shabdam means sound. Ashabdam means no sound. Asparsham. Sparsham means touch. Asparsham, you can't even touch it. You can't feel it also. Arupam, no form. Agandam, no smell. So Lord is free from all these attributes of sound, touch, taste, smell. Which means whatever God you have experienced, which you have seen, which you can smell, which you can touch, is what form of God? Which is called what? Apara Prakriti. It is not Para Prakriti, it is Apara Prakriti. That is what we are experiencing, most of us, all of us. So such a darshanam is not wrong, it is a great darshanam, but it is the starting point for all of us. Right? So, now he has given you the nature of that highest God, which is called what? Avyaktam. Okay? Now, of course, when we say, yes. To someone who is blind. Yeah, but yet you can describe the form God to him. Right? Supposing you can describe Shiva to him. You say Shiva has got beautiful eyes, has got a beautiful, form. So he can understand it with his mind. But that is only the form God. But how would you describe the formless God without any attributes? How is a blind person going to experience that? It is only through that final stage after going through Shravanam, Mananam and come to Nididhyasanam. So even a blind person can receive the knowledge, right? Reflect on the knowledge of the Supreme God, unmanifest, and through experience, how? In meditation. That's why ultimately all have to come to meditation. So in meditation, those even have eyes, they close their eyes, they can also experience that Brahman also. So we don't need, in fact, our senses to come to the highest form of Lord. But the lowest form of Lord, we need our senses to worship. Okay? So, once you understand that God is formless, now the next question will be, where is He located? So where is this God located? Lord is located everywhere means what? Correct.
You have to feel it.
Correct.
Meditation.
You have to experience.
Yeah. We are still in darkness.
Correct. Because it's because why? When you say we are in darkness, means what? The mind is still full of impurities. That is the problem. We have to tackle the mind first. Before we even sit for meditation, our mind is running all over the place. Right, it's a monkey mind. So how do we tame the mind? By doing karma yoga, by doing upasana yoga. We have to increase the effort of karma yoga and upasana yoga. Meditation comes at the final stage. That's why many people go away for weekend meditation camp. Saturday, Sunday. Sunday come back very peaceful. Monday Mahabharata starts again. So weekend meditation is not going to help you. You've got to do daily karma yoga, upasana yoga. If you do that, then you will come easily into meditation. Okay. So now, what was I saying? Now, where is he located? Formless. When you say formless means, neither can he come, neither can he go. He is there all the time. So, it is okay to start with a form God, but ultimately we have to discover this highest form of God. Which means what? Once we come to that, God is never away from me and I am never away from God. He is there with me all the time. So, therefore, he says, the next nature of God here is talking about Maya Tatam Sarvam Idam Jagat. Maya, I, Tatam Pervade. I pervade. Tatam means to pervade. What? This Idam Sarvam Jagat, the whole creation, I am pervading everywhere. I am all pervading. That is the second nature. The first nature he gave was what? Avyaktam, unmanifest. Second, this unmanifest nature is available in the whole creation. Idam Jagat. So this higher nature of God, so when we say it is available in this whole universe, it means that the higher nature of God has got no spatial limitations. Whereas the God we worship is in a particular temple. Once you leave the temple, the form of God is still there. Whereas the higher nature of God is not bound by any spatial limitation. So, great people like Adi Shankaracharya could go to temple, worship God in form, then they could leave the temple, come out and see God in everything in creation. So, worshipping God in form is what? Ekarupa Bhakti. The same devotee comes out of the temple, sees God everywhere, in the tree, in the enemy, in the friend, in the snake, in the cow. It is Anekarupa Bhakti. And the same devotee can sit down, close his eyes and experience God within, which is Arupa Bhakti. So, all three stages of experiencing God are there. It is not that when you come to the higher stage, you want to neglect the lower stage. No. In fact, you can experience God in all three stages of worship. So, limit. Ekarupa, Anekarupa and Arupa. Arupa means no form. Rupa is form, so you put A in front, becomes Arupa, formless. So, it is not, it doesn't have any spatial limitations, it has got no boundaries. Okay? Only a form has got boundaries. So, when the question is asked, where is Lord? Is the Lord in the temple? Is the Lord, what is should be our answer? Lord is in the temple and everywhere also. Correct, you're right. Because at the initial level, we need a point of concentration. But once we are beyond that, we can sit anywhere and also experience God also.
Attached
to?
To that particular God.
Ah, yes, of course. Yeah. That is the thing. We don't move on. Yeah, we don't move on. So to understand this particular God is also everywhere. Then I can experience Him at anywhere and any time also.
That comes with knowledge.
With knowledge and also with devotion, both. Your knowledge must be combined with devotion. That must be there. So therefore we must understand to merge with God is not a question of traveling, because God is everywhere. We don't have to travel to merge with God. It is just understanding that God is everywhere. Okay? Tatam, all pervading. Sarvam idam jagat, the whole world, this God is pervading. And that's why in the Upanishads, they give a very abstract definition of this highest God. They say He is both far and near. Meaning what? Meaning He is everywhere. He is far also, He is near also. He is here within you, He is far away also. Depends how you want to think of Him. You want to think of Him far away, He is there. You want to think of Him nearby to you, He is also there. So that means what? He is all pervading. And thus now He says, Matstani sarva bhutani nacha aham teshu avashtitaha. The whole last two lines. Now, bhutani, sarva bhutani means the whole creation, everything in creation. Now Krishna is talking about this creation. Sarva bhutani, what he says there? Sarva bhutani, all beings, matstani, matstani means exists in me. So this is his first part of the statement. Sarva bhutani, the whole creation, matstani exists in me. Okay, first part of the statement. Second part. nacha aham teshu avastita. Nacha aham, I am not. Avastita means contain. Teshu, in them. So what is saying now? All the creation exists in me, right? But I am not in them. So first we need to understand this. So when he says the whole creation, the word used here is sarva bhutani, the whole creation, which means what? It means both sentient and insentient, moving and non-moving, everything in creation, trees, rocks, birds, plants, animals, everything in creation, moving and non-moving, Krishna says, they are all in me. Now, which means what? To understand this, let us take a simple example of gold and ornaments. The origin of all the ornaments is gold. So therefore, gold is the very source of all ornaments, right? So when he says all beings exist in me, meaning I am the support of all the creation. Without gold, there will be no ornaments. Without clay, there will be no pots. Okay? So the whole creation depends on God. God is the very source or the very substratum of the whole creation. Okay? Now, at the same time, he says, I am not in them. Meaning what? I am not supported by the creation. You remember in chapter 8, what did he say? The creation goes from manifest to unmanifest, and then from unmanifest to manifest. But what happens to God? He is beyond the manifest and unmanifest. Remember unmanifest number 2? He spoke about manifest creation, like the tree goes back to seed form. So from manifest, it goes back to unmanifest. The seed again becomes the tree. From unmanifest, it goes to manifest. But where is this consciousness? It is beyond this manifest and unmanifest. So what he is saying here is that whole creation is supported by me, is dependent on me, just like ornaments are dependent on gold. But when the ornaments are all melted, what happens to the gold? It still remains. Gold does not depend on ornaments for its existence. Ornaments depend on gold for its existence. So that's what is meant by the whole creation is in me, but I am not in them. Is that clear? Okay, now I'm going to confuse you with verse 5. So also another example given by Shankara is like waves are dependent on the ocean. Ocean is not dependent on the waves. So now he has given us three qualities of this unmanifest God. One is that God is formless, unmanifest. First quality he gave us in this verse, verse number 4, avyakta. Second quality was Lord is all pervading. He is in this whole creation. And the third quality is what? Lord is the support of this whole creation. Without Lord, there will be no creation at all. So three qualities of this unmanifest God have been given. Now we come to the confusing verse in verse number 5. Okay. What does he say in verse number 5? Bhutani na majtani. Bhutani, this created things, everything in creation. Na, do not, majtani exist in me. What did he say in verse 4? They all exist in me. Now he's saying what? All the creation doesn't exist in me. So now, immediate contradiction. So is this a contradiction, or let us try to understand what he's trying to say here. So it all depends now, from what standpoint do we look at creation? This is what Adi Shankaracharya explains this verse very beautifully. So it depends now on the viewpoint of how we look at creation. Now, he gives an example of a waker having now gone into a dream state. So in the dream state, the waker now is dissolved. There's no more waker, right? Waker means experiencing the waking world. Now this person goes into a dream state. In the dream state, he creates a dream. Right? Is the dream real or false? Is a dream real or false? False. Yet, who has created the dream? Wakers created the dream. And in the dream, you can even frighten, right? You see a tiger jumping on you, you scream, right? You say the dream is false. But to the dreamer, the dream is very, very real. So, you have experienced the dream, intimately it is real. Now, from the dreamer's viewpoint, is the dream false or real?
Real.
While he's dreaming. So from the dreamer's viewpoint. From the dreamer's viewpoint, is the dream real or false?
Real.
From the waker's viewpoint, it is false. Okay? So one side is real, one side it is false. Now, when you analyze the dream, it does not exist at all. Right? If in the dream you won $1 million, when you wake up, you check your bank balance, still 1,000 ringgit only. You are not a millionaire. Correct? Okay. So here the same thing now.
Dream money.
Okay. So this is what in Vedanta, is what is called mithya. It looks like it exists, but in reality, actually the world of this creation does not exist. That is why it is called Maya. Why? Because it is only a temporary existence. It appears to exist, but every second of the time it is changing. So that's why he says, they are not in me. Meaning what? It is a changing creation. Whereas God is changeless. So he says, although I am the substratum, I am supporting this whole creation, but in reality actually it does not exist. It is changing. Right? At the same time, just like the dream appears to exist while we are dreaming. Now what does it mean to us now? That means as long as we are in a state of ignorance, this world appears real to us. When we come to this knowledge and wake up, then what do we say? This world is mithya, it is false. It is changing, it is not reality. But in this reality, there, in this falseness, there is a reality which we have to discover. So at the same time, you cannot say the world is there, at the same time you cannot say it is not there. It depends on the viewpoint, whether you are ignorant or whether you have knowledge. So that's why he says, although he says the whole creation exists in me, meaning I am the very support, I am the very source, but in reality actually it does not exist. If you get knowledge, then you understand that this world is but nothing but Maya. It is subject to arrival and departure. So just like all pots, before the creation there was only clay. But when that clay is used to make pots, pots exist for a certain time, isn't it? After a while the pots are destroyed, it goes back again to clay. So there is only a momentary existence, there is only a momentary life of creation. So that's why he's saying in reality actually it does not exist, because it is continuously subject to change. So then he says what? Pashyame yogam aishwaram. Pashya means behold. Behold what? May my yoga. Yoga is the Lord's power. Aishwarya means divine. So Lord says, behold my divine power. May you recognize my yoga, Aishwarya, my divine yoga. Now what is this divine yoga? Which is the higher order of reality, which never changes. That is Lord's power. His unchanging reality. God's higher nature. You can call it Paramatma, you can call it Brahman, you can call it God, you can call it Ishvara. It is formless, it is all-pervading. And thus he says, Mama Atma Bhuta Bhavana Bhuta Brit. What is his power? Lord's power is, he says, my Atma, meaning myself, Lord's self, is talking about himself now. What is his power? Bhuta Bhavana means he is the origin of everything in creation. He is the support of everything in creation. So, Bhuta Bhavana means origin of everything in creation. That is His power, His glory. And He is also Bhuta Brit. Bhuta Brit means He is the sustainer of everything. Not only He creates, but He also sustains, He nourishes the whole creation. So that means He is also in this creation. So His real nature is Sachit Ananda, and the power of God is the Trimurti, right? We talk about Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, the power to create, the power to preserve, and the power to dissolve. That is Lord's yoga. It is His power. Okay. So just like the dream world, who is created? We ourselves are created. It is the waker who has created the dream world. In the same way, that is the power of the waker, right? He can create the dream world. In the same way, Lord's power is also to create this whole creation also. So that is His yoga. Right? And everything to the dreamer looks real. Similarly, everything in creation also looks real here. So Krishna says, that is my power, that is my divine power to create and to sustain also this whole creation. And then He says finally, Nacha Bhutastha, everything that is, in reality, myself, in reality now He says, myself, I don't dwell in this creation. See, again, another contradiction here. I don't exist in this creation. Now when He says, because again the Sanskrit word Bhutashta means contained in created things, what does it mean? Just like the dream cannot exist when the waker awakes, what happens to the dream? The dream disappears. So in reality, when this world also is Maya, what is the only reality? Is God. So He says, I am the only reality in this creation. Therefore, although He is in the creation, when the whole creation is dissolved, what happens to God? He still exists. So that's why He says, although I am all pervading in creation, when the creation is destroyed, I still exist. When clay is in the pots, pots are destroyed, clay still exists. So that's why He says, I do not exist in them. I do not suffer. What exactly happens? The creation goes through a change. This human body goes through a change. Youth, old age, death. Whereas the consciousness in us remains the same. So this is what He's saying. I am the only reality that continues to exist. Okay. Now these two verses you have to go back and try to read and try to understand, because they appear contradictory. But if you really understand them, you understand the relationship between God and the world. So when we come back next week, we'll come and take from verses number 6 onwards. Any questions? Yes.
What about the wakeful state? What is the reality in the wakeful state?
Wakeful state actually signifies when you come to knowledge. When you come to knowledge, you are in a awake state. So dream state signifies when we are devoid of the knowledge, when we are in a state of darkness or ignorance. So wake state is the real state. But when you go deeper in it, actually even wake, dream and deep sleep are all false states also.
So it is dream and dream only.
Actually it's dream and dream only. Yes, you are right.
You can't handle all our powers.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so we end with a prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardana Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Hari Om. Thank you.